We're talking with Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for joining us here in the second hour in our members area. So, Suzanne, you've been looking at the fake revolutions. I wanted to ask you a little bit about this. I wanted to tie in the whole, the Occupy movement. But there's so many more that actually goes back to this idea that there might not even have been honest grassroots movement in the beginning. I think there might have been some, but at some stage in the game, they're being hijacked, taken over, and used for other purposes than the people who are, really understand and realize. Maybe we can begin on the Occupy movement, how you see this, and then we can talk about some of the other fake revolutions, Suzanne.
Yes, the Occupy movement is 100% fake, I believe. Based on my research. Now, it's based on my research and it's my educated opinion, but I, like you, I always leave room for doubt. The only real revolution that I've seen in my research was the Optor revolution in Serbia, which was in the 80s. Ever since then, the International Republican Institute has went into Serbia and spoke with the Optor people, found out how they were doing this, how they were able to bring down their government just by the people, the tactics they were using, how effective they were, actually used some experiments with them and got their playbook and have used it ever since to create all of the Arab Springs, including Occupy Wall Street and all of the revolutions that we've seen all across the globe. It's much easier and it's more cost effective. You don't have to go to war. You can start a fake grassroots effort and have the people, because they're already disenfranchised. Nobody likes their government.
Sure.
Yep. All of the governments are jerks. They're run by idiots.
Everybody knows it, and yet still everyone is, well, are they really voting though? Actually, they might not be. They might just be completely run by computers these days under the illusion that it's still the people. I don't know. Because yeah. Otherwise, why would anybody vote?
Yeah. And it's a show, it's theater. No matter, the thing goes back for me, the corporations. I live under the corporation of the United States of America. I'm an employee of the corporation. Now, most people don't realize that, but that's how it is. And everyone is a employee of the corporation of the country in which they live in. And we're just trading CEOs. That's all. But policy never changes. The direction of the corporation never changes. It's just the puppet that stands up in front of you and lies to you. That's all. That's the only thing that changes. So what flavor of ice cream do you prefer? That's basically what you're choosing.
Yeah.
It's still GMO. It's still bad for you. It's still horse meat. It's still fake. Are you going to go to McDonald's or Burger King? It's still garbage.
It is.
These fake revolutions, what they've done is it's really brilliant. It really is to me, because they've been able to maximize the disenfranchised emotions of the people. And through all kinds of coercive measures, developing propaganda, coming up with symbology and icons, because we are symbolic in nature. We look to ideals to capture our feelings, and they know this. So they use all means of propaganda and come up with symbols that we can relate to and come up with strategies for nonviolent resistance. And then the people are successful in toppling their government. Now, then what happens is the Department of Defense uses DynCorp or Blackwater to go into that country and stabilize the population, which means they put a gun in your face and tell you you're going to behave or you're going to get shot. Hmm. And then they install their patsy.
Yep.
And it's a great way to take over a country without, like I said, going to war and causing a big brouhaha. You can have the people call for their own tyranny because they don't realize what they're doing. A free nation has the ability to choose who their leaders are, with the direction in which their nation goes, what they believe in, what they adhere to, the rules and regulations that they all agree to abide by. But we don't have any of that. In Libya, Gaddafi came up with the dinar, wanted to free his people from economic slavery, brought in a lot of infrastructure and rebuilt the country. And the banker said, no, we can't have that. We can't have people having money that's actually worth something, that the people actually run their government, because there's all these resources here. So they cause a fake revolution. They assassinate the leader, and then they put in their patsy. We saw that with Egypt. Under Mohamed Morsi, Egypt is not freer. They're under Sharia law. They're under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood.
And that's just what they want. That's just what they want.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you use this as a tool. It's foreign policy. It works. It the World Bank, one of my articles, I mentioned that the World Bank was not as happy with Occupy Wall Street, because Occupy Wall Street has not been as successful as the other fake revolutions in toppling the government. And you have to understand, like when I talk to people about fiat and one world currency, they say, oh, but the banks, they deal in money. Why would they want to, the central bankers deal in money. Why would they want to, why would they want to destroy their own currency? That doesn't make any sense. They wouldn't have any money. Oh, it makes perfect sense. You can't have something new unless the old thing is removed. You know, yeah. you can't get a new husband unless you get a divorce from your old husband. So,
well, in some cases they have both, but I see your point.
Yes, some cases they do, but we call those polygamists, and we're not.
The bankers are not polygamists. Okay, got the message. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, they want to install this one world currency. In order to do that, they have to destroy all the fiat in all the sovereign nations across the globe. They're doing a very good job of that. The Bank of International Settlements told all the central banks last year that by 2019 they have to liquidate everything. That's why we're seeing this massive move towards sovereign debt. That's why Ben Bernanke is buying up $85 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities to be the biggest landowner here in the United States. That's why they're imploding the euro, and they're causing all of these problems, because if they have the physical land, the deed in their hand to the physical land, then they don't have to worry about the fiat anymore, because their fiat is based on nothing. In my opinion, the BRICS nations are the biggest threat to the technocrats, because the BRICS nations have been buying up gold and silver and precious metals to back up their fiat. It's not that they've gotten rid of their fiat, they're still trading it, but they're backing its weight in precious metals so that the fiat is actually worth something now. That is abhorrent to all of the technocrats, because they deal in credit and pieces of paper that don't have any backing. So they're trading in their fiat for hard assets. They're getting a hold of the actual countries. They're getting a hold of actual things that they then have some value or some worth in. But the BRICS nations want the worth of the country to not be on the backs of the slaves that live there. They want the worth of the country to be in its precious metal stores. With these fake revolutions, it's perfect, because the people are so disillusioned with their government that they're willing to stand up against if they're given the right proper tools. And so they go ahead and they do that. Now, it's a nameless, faceless movement. And I'm always suspect of people who work in the shadows. Yeah, our government works in the shadows. The shadow government. The technocrats work in the shadows. The guys who are way up at the top, I don't know what their names are. I don't think anybody does. Anybody that we can see in the light, I think, is probably a puppet.
I think you're right.
And so when you've got a nameless, faceless movement, it could be anybody. It could be anything. And what was shocking to me was, it was the Endowment for Democracy with the U.S. Congress funneling money into support the IRI and put in these fake grassroots efforts all across the country, all across the world, and here in our country. And they do this so perfectly that everybody participating has no idea what they're doing. And then when it's all said and done, they're worse off than they were before.
Yeah.
And what can you do about it then? You've already done the deed. You've already had the revolution. Now you've got the new guy in, and he's worse than the guy before him. And now you're stuck.
It's amazing to me how throughout history, these revolutionary movements have been going, they've been used, and things have, well, in my opinion, progressively just gotten worse and worse as well. To a certain degree, we have some material comfort for sure, but at the end of it, I mean, we're more enslaved in our mind, you know, a spiritual enslavement today than ever before. So how is this going to solve anything? I don't know. But, you know, granted, people have short memory. They don't read history. They don't understand those kinds of things. But how do you think, Suzanne, that they want to reform, if you will, then society with these revolutionary movements? Where are they leading and steering us, do you think?
I think they're really making sure that they've got it covered. They're making sure that the guy in charge really is playing ball. A lot of times the patsies that we install don't play ball after a while, like Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein decided, yeah, Gaddafi, Noriega, Castro's, you know, pretty good. We traded him in from Batista, but he's doing an okay job.
Knights of Malta, no problem.
Knights of Malta, yeah. They want to make sure that, you know, they're so close to this, they're so close to their one world government and the one world currency. They want to make sure that everybody who is in charge is on the right page.
They don't want any rogue agents that potentially are in a position where they can actually effect some change, where they can take a large section of the population with them and actually do something that really would hurt the agenda. So what you're saying, Suzanne, is that if you see these so-called heroes or whatever you want to call them up there, representatives of the people, if you will, then they are most likely bought and paid for, or they are going to be bought and paid for.
Absolutely. I'll take Anonymous. Whatever Anonymous is, you know, I have seen that a lot of members of Anonymous do work for the CIA and the NSA. And I'm sure not all of them. You know, just like in the fake revolutions, not everyone who's part of the Arab Spring or Occupy Wall Street knows what's going on.
Sure, yeah.
It's the guys up at the top.
Yeah.
Anonymous...
Sorry to interrupt, Suzanne. I think it was called Anon-Ops or what's it called? The operations behind Anonymous, anyway. And they were allegedly, distributing the tasks that were to be performed by Anonymous. That's what I know about that, anyway.
Yes. And that's why I say it's the guys up at the top, whoever they are. It's another nameless, faceless organization. But I see what they do. You know, in my personal life, I don't pay attention to what people say. I pay attention to what they do. Because what you do tells me what you're thinking. You know, when I'm hungry, the first thing I do is I get up and go to the fridge. So I pay attention to what people do. And when Anonymous goes and does something, it the consequence is more controls over the internet. Now we have a cybersecurity executive order. Now we have Big Brother controls coming at us. On my website today, there's the copyright alert system that just came out. Now your ISP can control whether or not you're able to go to a website.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whatever Anonymous is, if they're trying to maintain the free flow of information on the internet, they're doing a terrible job and they need to be replaced. They need to be fired.
So CISPA, SOPA, ACTA, etc. was created to, well, Anonymous rather was actually there in place, do you believe then, to actually make these propositions and suggestions and acts to go through, basically. That we need an incentive of why we should change internet security. And the reason in this case was, well, because we have Anonymous and they're wrecking everything, right? So we need to have all these places, laws come in and change this.
Yes, it's the Hegelian dialectic. We need a boogeyman. Here in the United States after 9/11, oh my God, Al-Qaeda. Does anyone remember where Al-Qaeda came from? Let me tell you. Al-Qaeda came out of the 1980s during the in Afghanistan. We were fighting the Russians. They took the Mujahideen, organized them, our government with Hillary Clinton, organized them and created Al-Qaeda. Now Al-Qaeda is the boogeyman, which is why we're getting molested at the airports. They could be under your bed. They could be in your refrigerator. Watch out. Al-Qaeda.
Oh, that's amazing.
The Taliban was created by the CIA, completely created by the CIA. Taliban didn't exist at all. At least the Mujahideen did exist. No. The Taliban is completely CIA created. We need a boogeyman in order to justify the controls. That's how it works. In our fairy tales, we have a bad guy. We're trained to look for a bad guy to justify the changes in our world. And so the powers that be have just taken these fairy tales and created real life fairy tales. And so the bad guy does something. Just recently, Anonymous came out and said, we know that what we're going to do is going to destroy the free flow of information on the internet, but we have to do it anyway to save the internet. Really? Are you serious? Mm. Then they go and hack into the Federal Reserve and the DOJ and a couple of other websites for the government, which, by the way, I don't think that you hack into the central banker's website, but, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, they take down MasterCard for a little bit and some of the other big sites out there, and people are, oh my God, it's really happening. They're just mm-hmm. taking over. We have to stop it.
Right. And then all of a sudden we have all these cybersecurity bills, and CISPA is back. They've taken it off the shelf here in Congress, and now they're reviewing it.
Sure. Yeah.
And they're going to put it through. And like I said, the copyright alert system, now your ISP controls. If you go to a website that has copyrighted material that doesn't have the right to have that copyrighted material up there, and it's not just BitTorrent and places where you download copyrighted material without the consent of the person holding copyright, you are given warnings. You're given 6 warnings, and then your ISP can block you. You don't get to go to that website. You don't get to surf the internet freely. Each individual person is penalized based on where they go and what they do on the internet. And here's another thing, and it goes back to the fake revolutions. It's very terrible when your government mandates by law or decree, like here in the United States, President Obama says, hey, I'll just bypass Congress and write an executive order and get my stuff done. That's a decree. That's a monarchy.
Yeah.
But when they coerce the local governments or the corporations to do their bidding, then the government doesn't have to worry about doing all of their brouhaha. They can just have it done through the corporations and on the state level. And we're seeing a lot of that.
Oh, tons of that. That's how the government does it these days. They hand it out, they privatize it, or they hand the service to another company and they can run it. And then people think, oh, look, it's all these evil corporations. But the fact is as well that they wouldn't be in a position to be able to do this without the government. The very government is there enabling all of this to happen. The government is there with their monopoly violence to enforce whatever service that they've handed out to the companies to do. And they do that with police and military in whatever way they want to. So, of course, it's a symbiotic relationship that they have, the corporate world and the political world. But I don't think that one is... well, if there is one that stands above the other, it is the government, Suzanne, because they are there at the end of the day to enforce whatever is being done by, you know, by a company, if you will, then with violence and with force.
Right. We have access to free energy. There's the Kesha Foundation, who has patents. You can download their patents for free and build it if you want to. But we have to have wind turbines, and we have to have government subsidies, and we have to have electric cars that work on gasoline and ethanol. There's all these little loopholes in order to keep the government controlling what we have access to and what betters our world. When, you know, if you go to a junkyard and you have a blueprint, you can build something, a generator right now, and unhook your house from the grid and have free energy. And the funny thing is that they're using these technologies that they say don't exist. Like in Dubai, they built a static generator, Tesla technology, which doesn't exist, right?
Right.
But what they're doing is they're ionizing the elements in the atmosphere, not all, you know, way up there, just on the lower end, to create clouds, to ionize water molecules and create rain. And in 52 experiments, they were successful in creating thunderstorms in Dubai.
Interesting.
But you and I can't have access to this technology. Not that we want to create rain, but the technology, the free energy technology of taking the electricity in the atmosphere in your room and generating it so that you can light and power your house. You can't have that kind of technology. You have to have the technology that they is pre-approved by the government.
It's
because it makes money for them.
Right, and it's hinged on dependency again. Otherwise, you would become independent. You could disconnect your house from the smart grid, and why would you even need the smart meters and everything else? It's they're going the total opposite way, dependency and just everything being connected to the central grid, which is an awful way to do it, of course, but this is how they're running it.
Yeah, Obama just came out, and just recently I wrote two articles on this. If Congress will not pass his climate change agenda for his second term, then he's just going to write a bunch of executive orders and have it done.
Yeah. Wonderful. I wonder what the changes are going to be under that, heading towards Agenda 21. Perfect. Even more enslavement. Now, tell us, Suzanne, how you think that social media have been used in all of this as well, especially the latest, kind of versions of the revolutions. I've read many, many different takes on this. And we have George Soros involved, movements.org, the Alliance of Youth Movements. Google has been involved in there. They have most likely had scripts running to try to manipulate perception through fake user accounts, that really are bots and AI systems and such. And it seems like in the Facebook, Twitter, YouTube kind of world that we're in right now, they've managed to use these tools extensively to their advantage to actually manipulate incentive or opinion towards the revolutionary movement. So what do you see about this?
It's perfect. The internet, as far as that goes, is absolutely perfect because you have no idea who's on the other end of that screen. And the people who have moved from the mainstream to alternative believe everything that they read on the internet. And don't do any research to find out who started that website and what that website's agenda is. And a lot of the trusted sources in alternative media are co-opted. And because they have what I call branded loyalty, once you trust that source and you stop questioning and you stop researching for yourself and you just believe what they say, then they just start to say anything they want. And I've worked with people like that in this industry, and I've sensed disassociated myself with them because I realize they're in it for something that has nothing to do with what this started as an alternative to the mainstream. Because in the mainstream, they tell you what they want you to hear, they tell you how to think, they tell you what to get upset over, they tell you how to perceive things instead of just the press was originally designed as a checks and balances to expose corruption and scumbaggery and all of these things and make sure that the people who are operating in the shadows came to the light, like with Watergate and things like that. But it's since changed. And since all of our media is owned by five different corporations, you're not getting unbiased opinion. Period.
Never, no. And as you say, they... At best, what they did was that they reported on whatever happened, the event, the accident, what have you, and then stayed away. But today we have all these, as you say, Suzanne, opinions and experts that come in and tell you what to think about it or how we should react to it or what you should feel or what should be changed now consequently because of this event. It's very slick, very, very sly. So, Suzanne, I was the other day, I posted a story about the new wonderful software developed by Raytheon. It's called Riot. It's basically kind of a browser where you can...
Yes.
Did you hear about that? Isn't that incredible?
I wrote a story about that too. Isn't that wonderful? And it goes with domain awareness, and it goes with Trapwire and all these wonderful things that we have now that control every little bit of information and manipulate it so that we don't know which end is up, right?
WikiLeaks had a story where they basically, they detailed a little bit of how screwed we are overall because of the fact that with the smartphones you have GPS coordinates embedded into the photos, etc. And when you do upload them to these various sites, they can basically see where you're at. And what was so great about this Raytheon software called Riot was that you basically could see, you know, where you generally did most of your postings. They had this analytical system that ran, you know, scanned the data and said, well, most likely if you you know, visit the, they did an example with this one person. I'll link up the video as well that they did. But if you go to the gym and Monday is at, I don't know if it's 6 p.m. or a.m. or whatever, you're most likely to bump into the person. So it's a perfect, like a harassers and a stalkers kind of, you know, wet dream that's coming through with all of this. I don't know how many, personal information things are available online now. I stumbled over something else the other day. I forget the name of the website, but allegedly you can even buy these reports from them with, where you've lived all your life, your previous, this was in the States primarily, I think, but they're working on doing this worldwide as well. Your previous
Spokio is one of those.
Spokio, was it?
Yeah, Spokio is one of those. I actually looked myself up on Spokio and I was terrified. It knew everything about me.
It's really creepy. Who's supplying them with all this data?
I have no idea. It scares me.
It's got to be the government, right? That has this available, and then these companies come in and sells, you know, buys it from the government, right? Because these are
it's governments. It's also websites. There's one website. It's an alternative news site, and I won't name their name. But they download a Trojan cookie onto your computer that monitors your movements from the time that you are on their site to the time you leave. And then when you get back to their site, it downloads all that information and then re-uploads the cookie. And they say it's for marketing purposes. That's what Google does. Google tracks everything you do. And then the next day, if you were online looking at guitar parts, the next day when you go to websites, all the commercials are for guitar parts, right? So they know exactly what you're doing. But yeah, the Raytheon is huge because this is predictive. And I've written an article recently about all of this predictive software that's coming out. And that's domain awareness is one of them. Trapwire works with it. But domain awareness is more like Riot because they're guessing based on you what they see. You know, they look at you with the facial recognition cameras. They go back to all the data about you. And they want to know what you're going to do next, regardless of what it is. They say it's for crime prevention purposes. But, didn't we see a movie like that, Minority Report? I mean, in my house with my children, nobody gets in trouble until they've actually done something. There's no pre-crime in my house. I don't believe in that. Even up until the point where you're at the position where you're going to commit the crime, you still have a choice of whether or not you're going to do it.
I knew you were going to take those cookies. I just know it. I know you're going to take them, so I'm going to punish you for it right now.
Yes, exactly. No, you can't do that. You have to allow people the opportunity to make the right choice.
That's right.
And you can't base... I've known people that... When I was on the farm, you meet a lot of different people. I've known people that, you know, normally no one wouldn't talk to them if you saw them on the street. You would clutch your bag and get across the street from them. These are actually really wonderful, nice people. You can't judge a book by its cover. I hate to use that cliche, but you really can't. And to say that we're going to prevent crime by criminalizing people before they become criminals, does that even make sense?
No, it doesn't. But by the way, I just want to mention this, Susan. I found the website. It's called Intellius. It's intellius.com. Intellius.com. And you plug in first name, last name, and city. I think that's optional. And then you can get all this data on people, allegedly, if this is even true. But it's a get a report. You can, of course, usually buy it so they make money on it. The same, but it's their age, date of birth, addresses, address history, phone numbers, aliases, relatives, neighbors, email addresses, social network statuses, property records, marriage and divorce, death records, criminal records, bankruptcies, judgments, lawsuits, etc. All this stuff. And it's like, who is providing these companies? I read a little bit about it as well. Intellius has been part of a lot of different, they're based out of Seattle, and they're involved in a lot of different lawsuits right now, because I'm wondering, how can they put all this data on the web and no one really like go after them and you know, tell them to take it down pretty much? And I think they have a service as well where you can take it down, but of course they charge money for that.
Well, it goes because of ignorance. You know, I'll go back to what I was saying about the police state here. I wrote this article because I found out that all the police departments or private security firms. They get away with that because nobody knows any better. And just a little tidbit on that, the police security firms that I found, most of them are all corporations. Most of them are dissolved corporations, which means they're not legally allowed to conduct business. And then the contracts that they have with the cities, they're invalid. The contract went up and they didn't re-up the contract. So there are police officers right now in cities all across the United States who are ticketing people, sending people to jail. They have no legal jurisdiction. They have no right to be a police officer because the business, the corporation that they work for doesn't exist anymore. If Target went out of business, I can't put on my Target uniform and go to work the next day.
Yeah.
And because nobody knows about this, it continues. And that's the problem.
Indeed.
Nobody knows. Yeah. And then when people do know, they say, oh, I can't do anything. You can go to your city council. You can go to your sheriff's department who has jurisdiction over all of the police departments in the United States. All the sheriffs do in their county. You can go to the state Senate representatives. You can go to local media, expose this and tell people about this. But the corruption continues because people don't know. And when they do know, they're like deer in the headlights. They don't know how to act.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do.
It's true. I think all it would entail, if you really think about it, is people who are on the first level, you know, somewhat intelligent. They can see what is happening around them or what they're, you know, experiencing. If they're being, if they're being bamboozled or fooled or something else. And then the second step in the process is to basically, report on it, if you will, or talk about it openly so that more and more people know about it. I think that this would be the best way to shut something down, or let's say that there is it's a company that is, not handling its business correctly, that they're, you know, they're fraudulent, what have you. If people just were to talk about that and even by word of mouth and like to say something about it, more and more people would find out. And what they need to do is stop supporting those companies if they don't like it. And yes, likewise is to go with governments as well. If they don't, you know, play ball, just don't interact with them. Stop doing business with them, you know?
Yes, it was a 14-year-old girl who got the flame retardant removed from Gatorade. She started a petition. She got a huge amount of signatures. And they responded. They took the flame retardant out of Gatorade and other products owned by Pepsi. A 14-year-old girl. I mean, come on, people. Most of us are older than that. Like I said, I'm 35. What has the alternative movement done to change our world? Nothing.
I think a bit, though, actually. I tend to give it a little bit more credit than that. I think things move fairly slowly, unfortunately, but the fact is that there's definitely more people awake and interested in a lot of this stuff now than before. And I would like to give credit where credit is due. And even if I don't agree with everyone that's out there and hollering and screaming and all that, I still think that there is a positive side in it, and that is that most people are at least opening up their eyes and getting aware. And I do believe as well, Susan, that if we continue on this line, if you will, and continue to spread the word, there will be more and more and more people involved in it. I mean, I've seen this over the last few years. I've been doing this since 2006, since even YouTube has come on the scene. There's a tremendous amount of people out there that are just looking at documentaries, listening to radio shows, and they're just, again, they're like that sponge I mentioned in the first hour. They just absorb everything. And I think that's a really positive thing.
It is very positive. What I see is the younger crowd, the people who are younger than you and I, 19, 16, 14, early 20s, actually affecting change. And it's taken a couple of generations of awareness and talking about things and not seeing any results and continuing to talk about conspiracies, you know, decades after they're done. We get it. It was a false flag. We get it. Now, how do we stop these false flags? And every time we see a false flag, the first thing we should do is raise our hand and say, no, it was a false flag. I'm not going to believe that. I don't think that we should have guns taken away from us because children were murdered. It's unfortunate. It's tragic. I'm a parent. Oh, my God. I can't imagine what these parents are going through. But one of the parents of the victims of Sandy Hook spoke at a conference and said, don't take my gun away from me.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's good. It's very good that they stand up and realize what's going on at a time like that when they're tremendously traumatized. And it's very refreshing to see that someone still can kind of remain their wits, if you will, in a situation like that and understand that they're using this as a political opportunity to unfold an agenda, you know?
Yeah, because back in 1963, there was a book that was published called The Naked Communist. And it was introduced into the Congressional Record. And it had 45 different points in order to turn our constitutional republic here in the United States to a fascist dictatorship under communism. And one of them was to have the guns removed as a term of morality, that it was a moral duty right. to disarm the population.
Yeah.
And that's why, oh my God, Sandy Hook, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Because we have to take the guns. Look, Sandy Hook. Well, Adam Lanza tried 8 times to get a gun legally, and he was denied because he had a mental disorder. So the gun laws work.
That's right.
He got it illegally. Obviously, the problem is illegal guns, and our government is involved in that. What was Fast and Furious about?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they've been pushing the drugs and dealing with the guns forever. Story after story is coming out throughout the years. I mean, this is what they do, people. This is their activity. And when they crack down on, when they talk about the war on drugs or now then the war on guns, I guess is the next thing. That is just to eradicate the competition. It's just to take away the petty little people who are like maybe dealing drugs on the street, because the biggest pusher of all is the government, and they want to keep it that way.
Right, and they never talk about the fact that all these drugs that they have children on in the schools are causing violence. Prozac is number one, Ritalin is number two. And they give the kids adult-type doses of these drugs, and they don't know what the long-term effects are of a brain that is developing.
Yeah.
How these inhibitors are going to react. But we see violent behavior in children.
Sure, sure.
And the irony is they put them on the drugs because they supposedly were being violent.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, see, and this goes back to what we talked about earlier, Suzanne. We talked about how the world, if you will, that we've been sold, that we've been promised is this, you know, you're not going to feel anything. You're not going to be, no one's going to hurt your emotions. And if you're depressed, we're going to take that away, for you. We're going to make it better. And I think it's if nothing else, it's a desperate attempt to reach out in a violent act by some of these kids. If it's even, let me preface that by saying, if it even is legit to the point where they actually are just acting on their own, because in many cases there might be more foul play involved, there might even be some kind of suggestion or even mind control type of things going on there. But nonetheless, let's make the assumption that they are the quote-unquote lone, you know, gunman, the lone nut, right? Then it's obvious that this is a reaction to something that's happening to them when they're growing up. They can't on these drugs, that they are completely disassociated from nature and from everything that's natural, and they end up flatlined on emotional scale, which is not feeling anything. And I think the only thing that happens is that the subconscious eventually is going to act out in some way, and unfortunately that seems to be in brutal violence that has taken place so far. And I'm not surprised. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, at Columbine, those kids had been violated sexually by officers that they were arrested several months before it happened, and they were put on pharmaceutical drugs, psychotropic drugs,
yeah,
before they did this. Mm-hmm. Peter Lanza was on psychotropic drugs. Susan Smith, who drowned her 5 babies, she was on psychotropic drugs. And after she committed that act, then they changed one of the side effects. You know, they call it a side effect. A side effect is an effect, okay, guys? It's what happens to you when all you have to do is eat right. Really, seriously. We eat for health, for mental health, for physical health, and in my house. And not to say that we're not sad and things don't affect us, but...
That's
we're basically
natural,
optimistic.
That's a natural part of life, Susanna. That's what I'm saying. That people are, they want to not experience those things anymore. And they think that they can disconnect from depression, just because they have a rough patch in their life. But that's just not how it works. We need those ups and downs in our life to grow. You know, it's a natural part of life.
Right. It's just like your immune system. When you vaccinate, they want 65 vaccinations before the age of 2. And I don't vaccinate my children. In fact, the reason why I don't vaccinate my children is my son got a first round of vaccinations and he had febrile seizures. And they told me, oh, well, you know, he was heat sensitive. Yeah, right. So we stopped vaccinating him. We went through an entire summer and it was one of the hottest summers here in Oregon. And he didn't have one seizure. And I was like, there you go.
Yeah.
My daughter has not been vaccinated. When you're a child, you need to get sick. You need to build up your immune system. Your immune system gets better and stronger every time you get sick. And so you get sick less and less. Well, it's the same thing with your mental stability. When you go through something, you get stronger.
That's right.
The next time it happens, you deal with it better.
Yeah.
But when we're taking things to satiate ourselves and to numb ourselves from the reality of life, we don't know how to deal with it. And we see that all the time. That's what road rage is about. That's why nobody can stay in a marriage. That's why nobody can remain friends. That's why everyone's fighting with each other all the time. We don't know how to deal with each other anymore because we satiate ourselves and we don't actually feel anything.
And we take all these substances to even suppress those things that we do feel, because when it comes through, it comes through with gusto. The floodgates open up and everything comes pouring out and it just becomes too much for people and overwhelming because we haven't dealt with it at those initial few things when it comes. We suppress it, we put on the lid and think it's going to go away, but it's not going to. It's going to come back, you know?
Yes. And every time the psychiatric community comes out with a new disorder, there's always a pharmaceutical for it.
Yeah, that's right. We found this new disease, but we already have the pill for it, so don't worry.
It'll be coming out in 2 months.
That's right.
Wow. It'll cause death and homicidal tendencies, but don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. Let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. I think it was Hippocrates or whoever said that. You know, that's I believe you're right on that, Suzanne. I wanted to, you know, before we round things up and for this time, Suzanne, I wanted to spend a few minutes here at least on one of the stories that I sent to you that I want to talk a little bit about. We haven't even brushed on this yet, unfortunately, but if nothing else, we could do it at another time if there's a lot to this. But you wrote a really good article on Patrick Clausen and the Zio communist takeover of the U.S. and also how this is being done under the cover of the Washington Institute. I think one of the most interesting links that I found therein is that the neocon agenda basically has its origins in Trotskyism. And
yes,
when I read that link that you linked up, it made sense, to put it, you know, mildly. Tell us a little bit about the story, if there's anything you want to preface with that, and of course how you see the Zio communist takeover of the U.S., how that is happening, and then a little bit later we can talk about the neoconservatives as being Trotskyites, Suzanne.
Well, I'll just read from the article. The neoconservatist perspective originates in Trotskyism. It's the belief that life of a civil society should be directed and regulated by the all-powerful state, both politically and economically. And neocons like Clausen adhere to the communist-based philosophy that the domain of the state in society and the symbol of the head, which is realized by the president, is as the royal decree that is their power to rule as divinely imbued. The communist movement that we saw in Russia was brilliant, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The move from Trotsky and Lenin into Stalin and the Bolshevik Revolution, that was beautiful. It's the same thing that we see with the fake revolutions and the Arab Springs. It's the people rising up and trying to get rid of the elites, not realizing that this is all a hydra. And when you cut one head off, the other one springs up. And it's also that old adage, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it.
Yeah, that's right. The Roma, sorry to interrupt Suzanne, but the Romanovs, you know, part of the, well, I think under the conditions people win was obviously much better than what was to come later on. But again, in this spirit of doing what's right. You know, that we're on the moral right side. We're doing this for everybody. It's going to be better for everyone. You know, in the name of the of good, let's do this thing, you know. And you put just worse people in charge, and the whole country just went to parts. I mean, it's incredible what happened. It was Russia was like a breadbasket, produced more food than any other country, I think, at that time. And all the farms were taken and stolen. People were burned and murdered, and assets were taken, and people's, you know, houses and family things that they've had in their family for hundreds of years. And look what happened. I mean, it's incredible to me when I think back of it.
Yes, and the Trotskyite ideal is the export of revolution, because they knew way back then, even before the IRA got a hold of Optor, they knew, and before Gene Sharp wrote his from Dictatorship to Democracy, which is sort of the handbook of all of these fake revolutions. It's got 193 ways to topple your government through nonviolent resistance. And it's been utilized. Now Gene Sharp has the Albert Einstein Institute, which is funded by the IRI. They have members of the RAND Corporation and DynCorp on their board of directors.
Yeah.
And they're funded by the National Endowment for Democracy. And so the neocon movement, it comes right out of communism. Absolutely right out of it. And there was another article that I wrote about the Democratic movement. The Democratic movement here in the United States has turned into the progressive movement. And progressivism began with FDR. And that was a socialist. That was one of the first, I think, and I could be wrong, but that was one of the first with Franklin D. Roosevelt, one of the first movements towards socializing our constitutional republic.
Yeah. Huh.
And so this idea of the New Deal coalition, which is championed by FDR, and it forged the democratic state and party organizations. It moved into city machines and labor unions, minorities and farmers, to rally them to fight for their rights under the guise that they were fighting for their rights. But with communism, the thing is that everyone's equal. Except the equality is that everyone is poor, broke, and homeless.
That's right.
And dependent on the government.
Yeah. And those who are running the government are living like kings in the palaces, you know?
Yes. Yes. And we have this movement here with what I see is the neocons fighting with the progressives for power.
Yeah,
it's not the Republican and the Democrat.
No. The neocons, the new con, it's a Fox conservatism. There is no party in the U.S. to represent the Republic anymore. Maybe the Libertarians are the closest, but nonetheless, you know, there's no options.
Well, the Libertarian movement was co-opted by Peter Thiel, who is on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group. He's also on the board of directors of the Singularity Institute. He's also the former owner of PayPal, the current owner of Palantir Technologies, which is one of the go-to Big Brother technological conglomerates in the industry that our government goes to when they need help surveying and monitoring all of the citizens here in the United States.
Yeah. What a name, huh? Palantir?
Palantir.
Palantir.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Palantir out of the Lord of the Rings. Interesting. All right.
Yes. Hmm. And there's an article up on my website, Occupy Corporatism, that I couldn't believe it when I dug into that. And Peter Thiel dumps millions of dollars into Rand and Ron Paul and the libertarian movement. So, you know, if you see a figure, it's probably not true. And then the other thing is, you know, whatever Ron Paul has done in his 30-year career, which a lot of it I think is great, he's brought a lot of awareness to the movement,
sure,
to the idea of bringing people to reality of what's really going on, who is really pulling the strings. But he threw all of that away. In my opinion,
mm-hmm,
when he said, "Hey, I was running for president, but I'm going to bow out. And by the way, my son is endorsing Mitt Romney. Thanks for the money. Bye."
Hmm. Yeah.
And now he's hooked up with some people in the alternative movement, and he's gaining traction and becoming an idol, a superstar in that respect. You know, and to me, it's all a game. It's all a show. What version of reality do I want to watch? You know, let me click through the channels here.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. We have to. I think everything in these times that we are in, Suzanne, anything that makes anybody of us rely on someone else to save us or to take us out of the situation is going to be built on a false premise. Again, no matter how well-intended those people are and how really sincere they might be about that. I think it's ultimately come down to, you know, the basics here. It's about us as individuals realizing what's going on, standing up for ourselves, taking responsibility for it, and don't trust that someone else is going to come along and fix it for us. That's what I think this is about. And that's why I also think so many people are disillusioned in these times, because they always look towards someone to fix it for them, or to be their savior, you know, to die for me on a cross. You know, they're looking for a new Messiah, mm-hmm. a new Jesus kind of thing, you know? And it's, I don't think that that's what is going to be the solution in this equation here. I think it's us.
No, but the flip side is it's one person. It's always been one person. Any change that's ever rocked the boat of this plan that's been going on for centuries, I mean, let's be honest here, that it's always been one person that's been able to put their plans on hold for a little bit, or you know, like I said, rock their boat so that they have to go into plan B or plan C or whatever, go to some other contingency plan. We can be the hero that we were waiting for. You know, everyone exactly. who listens yeah. to your show and listens to my show and other people who are inspiring them to get up off their butt and put down the potato chips and turn off the television and go and try and change their world. If anything, for selfish reasons. I don't want to die in an Agenda 21 megacity with my husband yeah. in our golden years.
Yeah.
That's not, and I don't want my children to grow up as bigger slaves than I was. You know, I'm yeah. lucky that yeah. I can do this, and I don't have to go to a slave job. But I know that most of the people who listen to my broadcast do. And I think that if we care just, even if it was just for selfish measures, to get up and change our world in any respect, even the slightest bit of change, you can affect your day simply by changing your mood yeah. and everything that happens to you, you know. If we did that in our physical world, then you would see things start to grow and prosper in a way that they don't want it to, but is more beneficial for you in the end.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we do it for ourselves first, and we do this because we can't help anybody else until we've helped ourselves. We need to be in a stable situation. And at that stage, that's when you can become a vehicle. And even the work you do, this is one thing I've been trying to get across as well. Those people who are genuinely in touch with themselves, if you will, their own dreams, that's nothing egotistical that it's driving that. I think because of their dedication to what they do, and again, it could be whatever, but there's so many different jobs on this planet to fulfill you know, wonderful services and tasks that, you know, people need to live, if you will. Mm-hmm. But if these people are really involved and fulfilling their own dream, doing what they believe is the right thing, I think the fruits of their labor, if you will, is something that is going to be beneficial for everybody. Think about Tesla, for instance. I mean, he's one of these guys, and I think that there's multiple of these types of humans around, but they might feel, you know, that they need to go to a day job like everyone else. They can't fulfill their dreams. They don't want to invest in it. They don't have the money to it, what have you. But if they would fulfill their own individual desire of what they are meant to do, I think that there are some tremendous advantages in that, and things that would, you know, land on this planet pretty much through these people that would be incredibly beneficial to everybody. Free tech, you know, free energy kind of technologies and solutions and everything. And again, I think we do all of these things at the end of it, first of all, for ourselves and for our own desire. And then the fruits of that is something that is going to be beneficial to others. That's what I believe anyway.
Absolutely. That's what I tell my listeners and my readers, that, you know, take what I'm saying to you and go past me. Go do more research. Don't believe what I'm saying. Go look at it yourself. Check out my source links and then go past me and find out for yourself. And then I get people who email me and say, oh, well, did you see this? No, thank you. Oh, here we go. You know, now we go, here's another bunny trail that we can travel down. because everything is up for grabs, like I've been saying. And the more that we realize how we're being controlled, the more we can learn how to get out of the control.
Yeah.
You know, once you figure it out, it's really, to me, it's likened to a abusive relationship. Once we realize that it's not so scary being alone, and we don't need to be treated like this, and there are other people out there that will love us, and we really get that, then we don't need that person, and we leave that person behind.
Yeah.
And we can do that on a global scale. We could do that with our governments. We can do that with our societies. We can do that with our... this is just one version of an economic system. There's been many others that have been attempted throughout time immemorium. And this one doesn't work. So let's try it. You know, they've traded feathers. They've traded seashells, notches on sticks, you know?
Yeah.
So this is fiat. Okay. Well, let's try something else, because obviously this doesn't work.
Well, there's been a lot of them, and far more successful, as you say. I mean, even multiple currencies to, you know, to stimulate, you know, basically spending on local currencies and stuff like that. There's tons of different solutions and things out there. And we just collectively, we had our heads in the sand, and we expect someone else to come along and save us from it. And we have this master and slave relationship with it that we, you know, most people, unfortunately, they actually want this. They want to be enslaved. They want to, otherwise we wouldn't be collectively in this situation right now, Suzanne. So there's something
right
in us that is, you know, that needs to change. Something in us that we need to wake up. We need to realize what's going on, take the responsibility. And if we do, I think we slowly can get out of the situation. But if we don't, this is just going to get worse and worse and worse until we take that step and just decide to disconnect from the system, you know?
Yes. Yes, I go back to I'll go back to the police as an example. When I was a little girl, they wore button-down T-shirts and slacks. Now they wear paramilitarized gear, and they look like something out of a first-person shooter game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What are they going to look like when my son is 20 years old and or 25, and he goes to have children?
It's going to be robots at that point.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I just wrote another article today about the robots, the autonomous robots, because they're working on these drones. They actually have robots teaching children in schools in Japan.
Yeah.
They're not fully autonomous, but they're robotic. They're looking for, there's a little one, he's about the size of my two-year-old. His name is Roboy, and he will be a service robot, you know, help you out for elderly and people who need help in their house for things that they can't do. And they're designing him like a child so that people will be more receptive to him.
Yeah, I took a look at the image of him. He had these big eyes on there and all cute and stuff.
Yeah.
Wonderful. They know how to do this. I got to give him that, you know.
And these AI technologies, you know, the problem is that the technology is wonderful. I think it's great that we live in this technological world.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing that I can speak to you. You and I would have never known each other. I had this conversation.
That's right.
But it's in the hands of psychopathic dirtbags. And that's the problem.
There's always someone programming these AI systems as well. I mean, I agree with you. I have nothing against. Why shouldn't we use technology to our advantage? Why shouldn't we have a robot that helps us around the house if we can? Why not? What's the problem with that? The issue is when it's connected to the smart grid and an AI central command system somewhere on the globe with massive, you know, servers is standing and doing, you know, war games on and all kinds of stuff on it. And then consequently, we might be in a situation where these robots, as we've seen in all the movies out there, right, the Terminator and the Matrix and everything else, where the system or someone that's programming the system decides that, you know, it's going to turn on mankind now, then that infrastructure will be there and will be there in place. And that's what's, you know, so dangerous about this.
Absolutely. I wrote an article recently about Obama's initiative to map the human brain and funding it through the National Institutes of Health, which also funded the Genome Project.
Yeah.
And what's scary to me about the transhumanist movement is I see that they've given up on the biochemical body. There's no way to get it to live forever, and they don't, you know, they want to live forever. But I see them moving toward the idea of creating a synthetic body with, they actually have synthetic skin that feels and reacts just like real skin does. this robotic body, and they're trying to figure out now what, how the brain works, what consciousness really is, so that they could maybe in the future imbue consciousness into a robotic neural net.
Upload it, pretty much. That's what they're looking at. Yeah, we have a Swedish guy working in one of the universities. I think it's over in England there, Anders Sundberg. He's working on this, how to get your, you know, you replicate the neural network of the brain, pretty much. But see, this is also how, from my perspective, Suzanne, how their faulty worldview is as well, because they are seems to be stuck that this is only a material experience. They have no account for the the soul or the spirit in any regard, it seems like. They just think, well, if we just can replicate the neural network of the brain, then and if we can spark that ignition, start it going, then effectively that will kind of be you. So there's no consideration for anything deeper or anything bigger at all in this picture.
Yes, and that's why I'm completely fascinated by the thing I brought up earlier. Who is this that's staring out of these eyes? This timeless, this timeless thing that has no that doesn't care about whether or not you're black or white or where you came from, that just wants to have an experience. What is that? Who am I really? I know that when I've had experiences in my life where I have, I'll tell you. When I had my son, I didn't know this, but I had preeclampsia, and I had two seizures and almost died.
Oh, wow. Sorry to hear that.
But the most incredible part of that was the first seizure I had in my sleep, so I don't remember going into the seizure. The second seizure, I was wide awake, and it was the most incredible thing. My body was moving independent of me, and when the paramedic, I was in the ambulance, and the paramedic said, "Suzanne, can you hear me?" And I said, "Yes, I can hear you." My lips didn't move. So I started screaming. I was screaming so loud that my voice was booming inside my brain, inside my head. And the first responder was not hearing me. And I couldn't, my head started to turn, and I couldn't do that. And I kept saying, "I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this." And all of a sudden it went black. I had tunnel vision. It went black. That one experience rocked me. And it still to this day has rocked me, because I haven't met anybody who can explain it other than I am here inside this body, but I am not, I am only attached to this body, when I want to be. Yeah. And this body is able to detach itself from who I am, who's looking through these eyes, and I don't have any control over that. And that is absolutely fascinating, and I think that if we understood that, we would understand how powerful we are. We would understand what's really going on here. And then these crazy psychopathic scumbags wouldn't matter. They wouldn't have any control over us anymore, because like you said, it's not material. Material is just a manifestation. There's something else going on here. And it's happening each individual person. And when we say that I'm an individual, I have my own opinion, I have my own perspective, we're talking about it, but we don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm hoping to have more of those kind of conversations. So I want to understand how I could talk and hear the paramedic and he couldn't hear me, and I couldn't control my body anymore. And yet I was there, fully aware of what was going on.
Sure, yeah.
Amazing.
It is. I mean, it's an incredible experience. I think what we're part of here, it's a magnificent place, really. It could be really much, much better than it is. And we are so tiny with our problems and petty issues and our lack of vision, if you will, really, when it comes to what we could do or how this planet really could be. So, but that's what we're working on, right, Suzanne? We're trying to inspire people and try to get them to wake up. And I think one by one, if we can have individuals, you know, changing that experience, because that's what it's really about, right? If you want to change the world, don't go out and try to tell everyone else what to do or how they should live or whatnot. It's about you changing your own reality, your own life, and what you do and your relationship to everything else. And then that's the change right there. And I think if more people do that, focus that energy on themselves, I think the results are going to follow on a collective level, if you will.
I hope so. That's what I'm in this for. I want some real, honest, tangible change. I want to understand. I want to be able to have conversations and not be, oh, you're kooky or you're being new agey about that. I want to understand, because I'm homeschooling my son and I'm telling him about what the world is about, and I've realized that I don't know either.
Yeah, well, that's true. We don't know, Suzanne. We said that before as well. We don't know shit. That's just the end of it. We think we do, but we don't. And we need to leave room for doubt. We need to leave room for other possibilities. And I think certainty is a somewhat dangerous thing. And I think, again, individually, we can know what is right for us, what is true. We can know, due to our own actions and our own experiences, we can be the testimony of our own, what we've done in our life, so forth. But as soon as it involves other people, other reports, if you will, and other things that have happened outside of us or outside of our proximity to this event, then it is going to be questionable, everything of it.
So let's keep having these conversations. And maybe, I don't know. Who knows?
All right, Susan, let's round up for this time. It's been very, very nice to have you with us. Interesting discussion, laid back, and I really enjoyed it. And I want to thank you for your time today, Susan. Please keep up the good work, and of course, give us your details again. And if there's anything else you'd like to leave us with, or if there's, something else you have up and coming or something like that that you want to mention, please go ahead.
Well, please visit realgorillamedia.com. If you are a member of the alternative media and you want to have a place where everybody's honest and networks and co-ops and we all take care of ourselves and take care of each other, be part of it. Even if you're not, I've had some people who are not journalists or activists or anything, but they want to do something. They woke up and they're sitting at home. What do I do? So email me, admin@occupycorporatism.com. Go to Real Guerrilla Media and download the application. Listen to broadcasts like Red Ice and Region 10 Report and the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. And do the research yourself. Don't trust anything until you've learned it for yourself. And keep an open mind. Really, keep an open mind, Everything changes. Everything shifts. Allow that your paradigm and your understanding and what you know to go with the flow and realize that you only know what you knew yesterday and learn something new today so that you can continue to expand.
Very good. We'll end on that note. Thank you again, Suzanne. We'll have the links, of course, up on the website. Now we can do this again at some point.
Oh, yes, definitely. Thank you.
All right, that's our program for today. Next up on Red Ice Radio, we have Paul Connett from the Fluoride Action Network, a very important program for you who are living in a fluoridated city. After this, we have a roundtable on the ancient giants of the Americas with Ross Hamilton, Jim Vieira, and Hugh Newman. We also have our part three with Ulla Damagård coming up after this. But we'll be back soon, and we will talk to you then. Take good care.